You need a good summer book to read. Mark Brumley, next. Hello and welcome to Focus, the Catholic Answers podcast for living, understanding, and defending your Catholic faith. To be a Christian is to be engaged with the Word, the written Word, and the Word of God in the person of Jesus. Words, 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 conversation. That's a great deal of what Catholic and Christian life is about. Speaking to one another, sharing good news. It's all part of the Christian faith. So reading is an important part. And also the delight of reading, the joy of reading. It's a way of sharing communion with a writer and with a community of other people who also are reading. It's all important stuff in the Christian vision of the world. And we tend to kind of put it off to the side. And frankly, we're losing the habit of reading. And by losing that habit, we're losing some of the habits that make it easier to fully live the Christian faith, a faith that is about the Word, is about sharing words, is about delivering news, and is about entering into conversation, even the divine conversation, so to speak. Mark Brumley is the president of Ignatius Press. He knows an awful lot about books, so we asked him, give us some suggestions for summer reading, and here's what he had to say. Mark Brumley, president of Ignatius Press, thanks for being with us.
Oh, it's a delight to be with you.
So what do you got for this summer for people?
I was going to say, on my Facebook page, I recommended sort of kind of offbeat Ignatius Press books. So I'm going to mention A Bloody Habit.
Oh, yes. I know you like this book. Yeah, right.
And
I have
like
not read
this.
It still. Okay.
And this is Eleanor Berg Nicholson.
Yeah.
Bloody Habit, which is the story about a Dominican priest who has a business card, and on his business card, it indicates that his vocation or avocation or profession is as a vampire hunter.
Yeah, that's the job to get. Yeah.
And the story is, I mean, it's about him, but it's also it's about an attorney, and it's set around 1900 when the original Dracula book is released. And so the story is told, and the character is reading the Dracula book. And as he's reading the Dracula book, Vince and his life have a certain correspondence to it. So this is actually a vampire story that involves a Dominican priest and a struggle of good versus evil, where in this universe, vampires are real. And it is not like a super pious type of book, and it's, you know, it's written as if it were a turn of the century novel. I mean,
that's great.
One of the brilliant elements of the stories is told in a style akin to what you experience, what's the reader of Bram Stoker's Dracula would experience. So just very cleverly done on so many levels. So people who want something that's a little offbeat in the world of Catholic fiction, you should get A Bloody Habit. I also mentioned on Facebook this book called The Eighth Arrow, which is by Father Weta, Augustus Weta. He wrote – it's one of my favorite books, and I can't think of the name of it.
Is it The Humility of Rules?
Humility Rules. That's it.
Yeah.
So it's built on – the Rule of St. Benedict, but it uses comedy, all right? Well, that's a separate book. The Eighth Arrow is the story of Odysseus in Dante's Hell. Dante wrote the Inferno.
Oh, yeah.
And the Eighth Arrow is about Odysseus trying to break out of hell.
Oh, that's great.
How he got there, how he gets out, and of course, Odysseus is a pagan, right?
Right.
So he's Ulysses in the Roman version, Odysseus in the Greek version. He's a pagan. And of course, because he does not know Christ and he was a pretty miserable sinner, he is ostensibly damned. But there's a way out. And the story is the adventure of his way out and his encounter. And this is going to sound more pious than I intended, his encounter with saving grace.
Oh, wonderful. Is Penelope in it?
She is.
Okay.
Penelope is his wife, and she makes an
appearance.
That's
one of the great marriages in all of literature.
As does Helen of Troy.
Oh, nice. Well, very good.
Yeah. And so it's a great adventure story. And it reminds me of C.S. Lewis's The Great Divorce, which is also a book people should read. It's a novel about a journey to hell, ostensibly to hell. And The Great Divorce is a fun book to read because it's not so much about what the ins and outs of what hell is like, but it's really what I think was to use the expression of Christopher Derrick, who is an author and a former student of Lewis's and a colleague of Lewis's. The Great Divorce is an example of Lewis's best subject, which Derrick says was the psychology of moral choice.
Oh.
And what goes into making the choices that we make, and why do we make those choices? What are our motives?
Yeah.
And The Great Divorce delves into how these people came to be in hell. You can't get out of hell if you're really in hell.
Yeah.
But some people, what they are experiencing as hell, it turns out to be purgatory.
Oh.
And so you see what goes into the moral judgments of the people that wind up staying there and it being hell, and what goes into the choices and the moral judgments of the people who don't stay there, and it winds up being for them purgatory. And the eighth arrow does a similar thing with Odysseus.
Wonderful.
And we can read ourselves into this man's mind and heart. So I encourage people to get those two books, C.S. Lewis's The Great Divorce and Father Augustus Weta book, The Eighth Arrow.
All right. Can I recommend a hell book while we're on it?
Sure.
A friend of Lewis, Charles Murray, wrote a book called Descent into Hell. Oh, it's awful. It's a brutal book.
Charles Williams.
Charles Williams. I'm sorry. What did I say? Yeah. Charles Murray.
Who's Charles Murray? The social theorist?
Oh, yeah. Charles Murray. Yeah, I got my father's wrong. Yes. Yeah, Descent into Hell. It's a very intense book, though. Very intense.
Yeah. What is it about the Descent into Hell that you found so intense?
Well, I think he's just a very thick writer. Right? Like it's not like, I don't know, it's like an old-fashioned kind of writing where it's just thick and I don't know. But a wonderful, wonderful novel.
But you see, I forget who the central character, what his name is, but you...
I can't remember.
Yeah, you see how a series of choices that he makes, he becomes further and further cut off from real people. We'll just say that without spoiling it. And becomes more and more insulated.
Yeah.
And it is a descent into hell.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, they say hell is other people. Well, no, actually, hell is not other people.
It's the lack of other people.
The inability.
Exactly backwards.
Rightly to relate to other people is damnation.
Yeah.
And you see that also in The Great Divorce as well. Mm-hmm. The attitude, the people that are in hell, they just keep moving further and further away from each other because they can't stand other people.
Yeah.
So people who say, well, I want to go to hell for the company, have a misunderstanding of the nature of hell.
No, right. That's right. A mistaken premise. Although I think the devil is perfectly happy for us to have mistaken premises about about hell. You want to give us a couple more before we have to go? Like a couple more summer reads, or have we tapped you out?
Well, no. I've got an endless supply.
Yeah.
We just read for our Napa book club a book called The High Crusade by Poole Anderson. Poole Anderson was a science fiction fantasy writer. And this is not, from a literary perspective, a profound book. But as my wife described it, it's a romp. It's a fun read. So the premise of this book is aliens invade England in the 14th century. And they're going to take over.
Yes.
And they make a mistake because this is advanced race, and they think that they're so much superior, they'll just use their advanced weapons and take over. But before they can do that, this group of Englishmen led by this lower-level bit of nobility, English nobility, they just attack this ship and they take over the ship. And so the story is, so they kill everybody except the one alien, and they use him to fly them. They're going to go, first they're going to go to France, then they're going to go to the Crusade.
Let's take care of France first.
To free the Holy Land, right?
That's perfect
but
English.
The alien winds up taking them to an outpost in you know, his alien race's galactic empire. And the fun part of this is how these Englishmen just take over the ship and wind up taking over this
That's great.
Alien empire. It's just a lot of fun.
Oh, that is, okay, the High Crusade it's called.
High Crusade. And, you know, there are a few inaccuracies from a Catholic theological point of view, you know.
Oh, yeah.
It perpetuates the myth that educated people in the Middle Ages thought the earth was flat, right?
Oh, my gosh.
They thought it was round.
I think
but this is a passing reference to
Washington Irving was the father of that myth. I think he sold that. And come on. Thomas Aquinas knew the world was round.
That's right. St. Augustine knew the world was round. Right. You know, the ancient Greeks. I'm part of the my daughter got me for Father's Day a Round Earth Society T-shirt. You know, and yeah. We've been around since 500 BC. Come on, guys.
Anyway,
High Crusade, lots of fun. Encourage people to get that book, read that book. What would you leave them with?
I'm stuck on apocalyptic literature now, and the
really?
So I would go. I don't know if people will like this book or not. It's because, but you said something about that book from 1900, and about that old timey writing. And there's a book from the early 1900s called The Lord of the World.
Lord of the World, right?
By
Hugh Benson.
Hugh Benson.
Yeah.
I think it's a great, wonderful book. I was shocked by one part of it, like shocked
really?
That a priest.
So help give people a general idea of what the book is about.
It's about
apocalyptic.
The Antichrist taking over the world and flying around in dirigible jet hybrids or whatever Father Benson imagined the future would be like. And he's got those the weird quality of death places where you just go to die if you don't feel like living anymore. It's total culture of death. He really saw that well. But I'll just tell you the part that I found shocking. And I have this idea that I don't want to have, but it's in my head, that somehow the church's attitude on everything changed around the 1960s. And a woman commits suicide in this book, but she's an innocent and she's saved. And he describes her salvation. And I thought, 1907, a Catholic priest wrote a book where the woman who committed suicide was saved. And it's actually quite beautiful. And I'm not advertising for suicide. I'm just saying that this was he understood that she was innocent in this act, fundamentally innocent, because she was utterly confused by the kind of social teaching of her time. But I don't know. I found that shocking and also just very hopeful.
So that's an apocalyptic novel, and it's hopeful in the end, because in the end, the Lord returns. But you know, the description of the world is it's getting bad, 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 and there's the Antichrist and everything's terrible.
Right.
But, you know, did you read sort of the alternative version novel that Robert Hugh Benson wrote called The Dawn of All?
No, never read it.
So that's just the opposite. That's where the church evangelizes the whole world and everybody converts.
So one of them is kind of the Pope Benedict version, and one of them is kind of the John Paul version.
Well, kind of in a way. I mean, you know,
that's funny.
You should get The Dawn of All. That's a fun book too.
Does it have killer dirigibles though? I mean, come on.
It does actually.
Okay, all right, I'll read it then.
Yeah, it does.
Okay.
And so, I mean, I think it's fun to read those two together. We could have a conversation about those two books from an apologetics point of view, because I think they are. As a lot of things that Hugh Benson wrote, they have a kind of an apologetical edge to them.
Yeah.
But it's a very different approach in the one than the other. You know, the apocalyptic end of the world, everything's going bad, evil's going to get worse and worse, and then the Lord's going to return. That's, you know, Lord of the World. And then Dawn of All is the church evangelizes and there's a conversion.
Oh, I got to read that.
You know, the you could just see this as the triumph of the Immaculate Heart of Mary, or however you want to describe that. But there are all kinds of interesting little apologetical elements in it that I think people would have fun with. I got to mention, this is sort of a high school pick, right? You know, you read this in high school, but I think it's a really great novel. And especially as we're dealing with issues of race and so on in our society, To Kill a Mockingbird, you know,
what a great, great novel. Yeah.
People, you know, and it's in a way, it's like so many things that you read in high school, it's wasted on high schoolers.
Oh,
right?
Yeah. Right.
Because they don't get it, you know. But I think it's a great book for older people to read. If you read it in high school, go back and reread it. If you didn't read it in high school, or if you said you read it in high school, but you really
but
didn't.
But you just watched the movie.
You watched the movie. People should read To Kill a Mockingbird. Should read the other Harper Lee book.
I thought Truman Capote wrote To Kill a Mockingbird.
No.
That's Truman a joke, Capote, Mark. Sorry.
Yeah, no, because
that's what people always say, that Truman Capote really wrote it. But sorry.
He couldn't write a book that good.
Maybe not. I don't know.
Harper Lee and Truman Capote were friends.
Yeah,
so,
very good friends. Yeah.
And one of the characters in To Kill a Mockingbird is based upon Truman Capote.
Now, see, I didn't know that.
Yeah. But Ghost at a Watchman is the same universe, same characters, but it's told from a different perspective. And it was actually apparently the first version of what became To Kill a Mockingbird. Harper Lee submitted it, and for reasons that apparently are somewhat still mysterious, it was turned down as a book. And then one of the little elements in the story of Ghost at a Watchman talks about Atticus Finch and his defending a black man accused of rape, sexual assault. And the editor told Harper Lee to go and tell a story about that, which she did, and that became To Kill a Mockingbird.
Wow.
But Ghost at a Watchman is told it's just a different story, and it deals with racial issues in a way that is a little more complex, because Atticus and his daughters, first of all, the daughter is in her 20s. She's grown up. She's gone to New York and mingled with the literary elite, and she's come back home. And she sees her father differently. So it's set some 20 years after, set in the 50s. So it's set some 20 years after the story of To Kill a Mockingbird. And Atticus is dealing with issues of segregation and desegregation in the South, and the post-Brown versus Board of Education world. And he's reacting. Of course, we know Atticus is not racist, but he's reacting to the federal government's incursion into, to states' rights and all of this. And obviously he's his daughter's hero, and yet there's a tension between the father and the daughter over how they view the federal government's involvement in promoting civil rights.
Wow.
And in some ways, it's a much more complex story. I love To Kill a Mockingbird. It's told obviously from, although it's narrated by, the character, the daughter is an older woman, but she's telling the story from her childhood. So I agree with Flannery O'Connor that To Kill a Mockingbird kind of reflects a children's perspective on that. I don't, for that reason, think it's a bad story. I think it's still a very powerful story. But we see an adult perspective, a young adult perspective in Ghost at a Watchman. So I think reading these two novels, you read To Kill a Mockingbird first, and then you read Ghost at a Watchman. Reading these two novels together this summer is a powerful experience. And by the way, although they're not heavy-handed in their religiosity, it's clear that these stories are coming out of a Christian worldview, and they're grappling with the issue of race and how Christian people, black and white, see race. in the 1950s and in the early 60s. So I can't recommend these two books read together highly enough.
Mark, thanks. I got a lot of reading to do. I hate to say it. I hope I don't disappoint you with this, but I think the first one I'm going to read is The High Crusade. I don't know. Something about that just grabbed me.
Well, and then I know I'm going running on. You guys need to wrap this show up, but probably my favorite novel of all time. I mean, okay. Brideshead Revisited is in the top five, but probably my favorite novel of all time is Till We Have Faces by C.S. Lewis.
Okay.
And it is it is a retelling of the Psyche myth, Psyche Cupid myth, and it is told from a pagan perspective, but there are deep Christian themes, and knowing yourself and the power of conversion and seeing yourself in the light of love, in the light of Christ. Now, these things are implicit in the story because, as I say, it's a retelling of the Cupid Psyche story. But I think it's just one of the best novels ever.
Oh.
And Lewis is a man, but his central character is a woman. And many women I know read it just say, how is it that he's so insightful
really? When
it comes to how a woman sees things. So, Till We Have Faces.
Now you make me want to go watch the podcast Pints with Jack. Have you ever been on that?
I have not been on that.
Oh, I'm going to tell him that he's got to beg you to come on there because that you.
But well, you should think about it. You know, in the title, Till We Have Faces, why won't the gods speak to us, answer us? You know, we have these questions. Why won't they speak to us, answer us face to face? Well, they can't answer us. Till We Have Faces.
Yeah.
So.
Beautiful, Mark.
There you go.
Mark Brumley, president of Ignatius Press. It's always fun to talk with you.
Oh, great talking with you. And let's have a reading summer.
Yes.
I say read, reflect, and discuss. Read, reflect, and discuss.
Okay.
I believe about reading what Mortimer Adler said. Reading is good, but solitary reading is like solitary drinking. It's better to read with others, to discuss.
Wonderful.
Just as it's better to drink with others and to celebrate.
We'd love to hear from you. If you read one of the books that Mark suggested, send us an email at radio@catholic.com. Also, send an email if you've got an idea for a future episode, or maybe you've got a bone to pick about this one, radio@catholic.com. If you're of a mood to support us, we could use your financial support to keep doing what we're doing. You can do that by going to givecatholic.com. Givecatholic.com. Don't forget to subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts, because if you subscribe, you'll be notified when new episodes are available, and we're making them. We'd love it if you'd hear them. If you're watching on YouTube, just like and subscribe at the bottom. That helps us to grow the podcast. And I think that about wraps it up. I got to go do some reading. We'll see you next time, God willing, right here on Catholic Answers Focus.